Hello and welcome to Playwright, a podcast about creating and sharing new ways to play. My name is Ryan Heyman, you can call me H.
And I'm Ryan Quintel, you can call me Q.
We are recording back-to-back with The Sound of Play this week, so if you enjoy the two of us specifically, The Sound of Play podcast is another one for you to check out this time of the year. It's a fun selection of music, and it's good to kind of be carrying that energy forward, I guess, how are you feeling anyways? I still feel pretty energetic. I still got it in me.
I think so. And you know what? It's always a delight. I actually, I made that joke last episode. I think that I got to get on the Sound of Play. You turned around and made it happen immediately. So thank you for that. But for people that don't know, like, Sound of Play was really my gateway into Kane and Rince. I started...
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I think the first time we ever recorded together was a Sound of Play, but it was also something that I really ended up loving in terms of... It's not common to have something that's really just about video game music, I feel like. And game music is in all these sources. It's in YouTube. It's on these streaming services. But nobody, like, really dedicated to making game music and showcasing game music. And that's what Sound of Play is so good at. So if you're a Sound of Play listener and you heeded the pitch to come over and listen to this show, thanks for taking a chance.
That's right. We're going to impress you, hopefully, with some great video game ideas. We'll see how it goes.
No promises on that front.
Yeah, I've got some fun stuff anyways, and we'll see what you and our community have in store. So let's get straight to it. This is some kind of crazy video game ideas for our Playwright Thursdays. All right, this first pitch, one of mine, I'm going to say, was actually inspired by... like I mentioned on Sound of Play, actually, one of the OctoCurio recent retweets. OctoCurio does a great job of highlighting interesting indie games and showcasing little kind of GIFs or videos that really exhibit what each of those games does differently than every other game. Really a good kind of elevator pitch for the game. And what they showed off today was a game in which you play a fish that can kind of swim in shadows cast by objects and can hop between them, and it's about kind of creating traveling in a person's shadow as they walk down a road and then jumping into the shadow of a building or something like that. So I want to do something similar, something about shadows interacting, but instead I want to do something that's kind of Katamari like, where you play a character and your shadow, as your shadow interacts with other shadows, kind of sticks onto them and adds them to kind of a bigger conglomerate, kind of like a Katamari would. But the twist is that each of the objects that the shadow represents, like a car or a train or a house or whatever, can move along with the character. Like, they are being physically dragged along as well. And so, not a problem for something like a car or a skateboard or a bird, but you want to avoid objects like mountains and buildings, things that can't move, because, that would, like, kind of end a run. Maybe that would be like a big, one of those kind of big honking score boosters to end your run and to get, like, a final cash out on. So yeah, something kind of score chasey, something that makes creative use of lighting and reflections of shadows, and can use it in kind of a fun arcadey way. So that's my pitch of the day. Let's start the clock and take it from there.
Yeah, one of the things I like about this, in my head, this is actually a perspective I'm feeling. I don't know if this works for you, but I like the idea of playing almost as a character, maybe in a top-down or isometric view, and having, like, instead of the right joystick be for camera control, if this is indeed, like, mapped to a joystick, maybe you could actually play as, like, an orbiting light around the character, so you have control over the direction and maybe the length and size of the person's shadow. So as they're like running through this environment, you find yourself constantly moving your light source around so that you have the right direction and length of shadow. And it's almost like if your shadow is larger or bigger than the object, then you can kind of barrel past it or pick it up Katamari style, like you said. But if your shadow is smaller, that, you know, it's something that actually drags you back.
Well, that's interesting. So would you not have kind of direct control over the player then? You would just kind of be that sun or that orbiting light?
That's a good question. I was thinking that you were both, or at least one stick potentially controls the person and then the mm-hmm. other is the light source. But I think about, this is a big ask for people, but in every time I download and attempt to like mess with the program Blender, 3D programs are really good at showing like, here is a source of a light. And as you move it around, this is what happens to an object in the shadow. And, you know, games do this in many ways, but usually you don't control light sources, you control cameras, right? So I like the idea of really kind of showing people, oh, when a light is overhead, a shadow is incredibly small, right? And maybe you need to make that shadow small to, say, get around one of those immovable mountains that you talked about. But then, you know, when it comes to defeating enemies, you're actually not tackling the enemy themselves, but rather absorbing their shadow. I think of like that feeling that Alan Wake's flashlight had against enemies before he kind of pops them into vulnerability, that sort of shh. And maybe there's like a shadow absorbing type thing that you can do when your shadow is larger than the enemy shadow or touches the enemy shadow.
So I do think that kind of an isometric perspective is the way to do this. I think that kind of simplifies a lot of the process. Have you played Felix the Reaper over the last year?
No.
Okay, that is a kind of a strategy puzzle game where you play kind of a dancing Grim Reaper on a grid-based system, and you kind of have to orchestrate all of these events in your environment. It's actually pretty complicated for what it is. You have to orchestrate events to lead characters to be killed, essentially. That's your purpose as a Grim Reaper. Yeah. But it's interesting because you have to stay out of the sun. You do that by kind of hopping into shadows, but you can also rotate the angle from which the sun is hitting the stage. And there are certain kind of tells that it uses to help you kind of determine where the shadow is going to be cast. But even so, it can be a little tricky to keep track of. You know, it's all grid based. And so there are a certain number of squares that are covered and a certain number that aren't. But I always feel like when it comes to light and shadow, I understand in concept, of course, like how they work. But implementation wise, you know, as you get closer to an object, the shadow becomes larger. As you get farther away, the shadow becomes smaller. And then as you move around it, it casts it in kind of interesting, weird ways. How would we make that, you know, easy to work with in a kind of reactive moment-to-moment sense? And it always feels like it's too easy to get yourself into trouble by making the shadow too big and accidentally touching something you're not supposed to. I don't know. I'm anticipating the controls being a little bit complicated.
It's a good question. One of the things that I kind of, this might help us solve it. The idea of essentially the way that a camera works in, I think of a racing game, for example. And so in racing games, like very often the camera is, it's defaulted to in front of you, right? You can see right in front of you and you're almost looking around when you start touching the right joystick. And in a third person car, it's kind of swiveling around the car. And so I wonder if the light source around me is far more flicky or twitchy, and at that it's always like right over my head, so I'm not casting any shadow. Then like if I very quickly need to flick it out, it's almost like flicking out a weapon or something, where I can very quickly pull my joystick to the left, the shadow becomes long to the right, mm-hmm. and I can absorb an enemy shadow that's to the right of me. And the idea of that being, you could almost make this a horror game, right? Because if you cast it in a lot of darkness, then potentially your light source is also needed to see some of the enemy or environments around you.
Another thing that I wanted to do is kind of play on this dichotomy of shadows being on a 2D surface and the real objects being in a three-dimensional plane, where as you conglomerate a shadow of something that's farther away from the character, you're essentially moving two points on the map now. And so if you have to go through tunnels, then there have to be kind of appropriately spaced tunnels for you to get through, or you have to find ways of making sure that all of the objects can pass through whatever obstacles are in your way. So for that reason, you might choose to avoid certain objects. You might choose to grab certain objects or reposition the light to kind of solve these tricky maneuverability problems as you add more and more objects to your group, essentially. And kind of like Katamari always ends up going into outer space and rolling up the entire world, I think it'd be fun if kind of the final stage on this could be something like a lunar eclipse, where you eventually add the moon to your shadow and are kind of dragging that around as well. But the moon is reflecting the sunlight, and so it does some interesting and weird, unexpected things with the way that shadows are being cast as it kind of reflects off of off of itself.
I'm thinking about that idea of the light and the shadow. Maybe a smarter thing isn't to let the player control it, but rather I think about the feeling of Doom and the way that Doom parentheses 2016, aka very Doom if you're a Kanan Rinse listener, has brought back circle strafing like as a legitimate strategy in a first person shooter. And I'm thinking about, like, could it be that you have in the environments that are casting these shadows, like set light sources, torches, whatever. And rather than being able to control around all of the light source that casts your shadow, you find yourself like essentially navigating between these different spotlights in order to get your shadow to change direction. Or maybe you get a combination of both where you can control it, but then occasionally all the lights go out and it drops away and you have to navigate the existing light sources to move your shadow around. Because if it's just like a global shadow, I think you're going to run into it always. The shadows are all going to be going in the same direction. And if it's like a day night, although that could be interesting, if it's a very fast day night cycle throughout a level over and over again, your shadow kind of changes throughout a cycled period.
Multiple light sources is an interesting twist to add to this, kind of like walking through a park at night and catching the shadows, catching the light of separate light posts along the path.
Yeah, it starts to feel very steampunk or something when I think of it like that.
Yeah, it's interesting thinking about how this kind of puzzle would change if you have multiple shadows to keep track of all at once, and they're always changing position and that kind of thing. But anyways, we're out of time. Let's wrap it up and let's give it a name.
You're going to have to come up with something better than this, because Shadow Slayer is too video game to be any good.
How about Shadow Play? It's kind of like a term for shadow puppets, right?
I think so. Shadow Play.
Shadow Play. I think that does the trick. I think that gets us there. Cool. Let's go on to your video game pitch today.
So my pitch today is kind of a genre smash into a classic sort of type of game. So I've been thinking about, I've pitched before civilization type games or strategy games on the show. But I was thinking about, like, what if you took a card game and made it a little bit more long form, put it into kind of the civilization building genre, and you get a deck of cards, or rather hand of cards, and you can play them, and you're acting as the ruler in each civilization, and cards maybe build monuments, they enact policies, maybe they can even spawn different units, or maybe you play as a god and you get kind of cool god powers with the cards or something. But you get all the card game mechanics where cards cost action points to use or cast. But then you could do fun stuff with, like, the cities that you found give you more cards that you draw per turn, or trade routes give you more action points per turn. You're basically building out a game Civilization style, but each turn along with kind of your or some traditional Civ building games, you also have this meta layer concept of deck building, using cards, and kind of casting things on your enemies.
All right, I'm gonna start the clock there. So I'm not super familiar with or kind of into the genre of, you know, deck-based RPGs, you know, that Slay the Spire and games like that, the Steam World Quest type of game. But I know that they're very popular, and I know that there's a lot of people that, you know, really swear by them. So maybe I'm not the best person to advise as to like interesting ways to take one of these games, but I think that this kind of adds interesting elements of choice to that style of game. How does kind of setting it in a like a three-dimensional map or like a Civ style map like really change the experience?
Well, what I'm thinking is like card games, I think card RPGs, especially your Slay the Spires, what have you, are traditionally very or relatively short individual run experiences. So you find yourself in these situations where, you know, you're playing a few hands. In the case maybe of a Slay the Spire, you have a boss and you can defeat and take down a boss by, you know, getting the right stuff at the right time in the right way. But what I thought was interesting about the bringing the deck into the Civilization universe or the Civilization format was this idea of the way that a deck is built. Like maybe you're in right now, Civilization realizes leaders as a set of attributes and they're kind of buffs or debuffs depending on the leader. But I like the idea of really a leader having kind of a deck of cards. They have a set of skills that they're good at, and so the actual actions that they can take as a leader are very much shaped by who they are. So you might have, for example, I'll use Gandhi, as he's a kind of a popular Civ leader. Gandhi would have a lot of cards that are all about spreading culture, building culture, establishing religion, this sort of stuff. And so the cards that Gandhi would have as at his disposal to maybe solve a diplomatic situation are going to be different than how, say, Genghis Khan might approach a problem. So the idea of leaders really being these set of skills and cards that one deploys rather than just like, Gandhi has a 5% religious bonus, and so, you know, if you want that sort of strategy, you're just going to pick Gandhi. But otherwise, it's a blank slate if it weren't for the bonus that's built into him.
So what are we thinking as far as structure for the game? I know a lot of these card-based games, you know, just by the nature of card games in general, tend to be kind of roguelike setups, games that are meant to be played with a, you know, you get what you, or you get what you get in each playthrough, and then you kind of shuffle everything in, start over, and hopefully have kind of a different experience next time around.
Yeah, so I was thinking about that, and I'm wondering if you can start layering mechanics, like if you're playing as a leader and you take over another leader's city. So you have many of the same, maybe you simplify some of the Civ mechanics and strip out things like policy decisions or religion switches and culture switches, so that you can, you know, leave that to the cards and leave the complexity sitting in the cards. But the idea of taking over another civilization's, and because that city was once a part of China and under that leader's rule, you suddenly find yourself with access to all these different cards that are coming out of this city that don't necessarily play into your strategy, but you have to sort of adapt and leverage the assets that you have in the city that you've adopted as your own. And you could even do that based on region or the way that in Civ, where you place your city, it has access to different resources and therefore is also generating a different set of cards for you. In terms of the actual actions, I think that kind of your basic Civ of like, okay, you can set some things in your city, maybe you can queue up units and things to be built, but cards that you can play in a turn, perhaps shave down the number of turns it's going to take to generate those units, or helps you enact a policy or instant spawn a unit, or perhaps build a monument that's going to give a particular city a buff. And, you know, Civ has that just one more turn style gameplay. And I think it would be cool to, like, the way a card game, as long as you didn't have to, as long as cards kind of went back into the deck and you didn't just discard them forever, Civ with cards could have that one more round of getting to play your cards.
Is there anything that we can do, and I don't know if I've seen this before, but kind of playing on the fact that cards are kind of, you know, physical objects as well, cutting cards and combining them, pasting them together somehow, anything that we can do, you know, even folding cards for easier draws, or I'm not sure, but like any way that we can kind of bring some of that physical artifice into this simulation game. I'm just thinking of like Paper Mario and the ways that it uses its papery type of aesthetic to kind of have interesting storytelling conceits, things that couldn't happen if it were representational of like a real Mario game. Like it is knowingly itself made of craft materials.
That's interesting. I think you might be able to do something. When two units go up against each other in Civ, they're very much rolling dice, right, to determine if you're going to win a battle. I wonder if when you get into battle with units, if there's it doesn't play out more like a game of Gwent than it does just sort of clicking on the units and seeing them punch each other a little bit, but you actually get more of a quick, fast-paced card game, and depending on the units that you have fighting, you have this little mini deck that you're drawing from of like, okay, they can, you know, people with archers can longbow fire, but they can also have a couple other cards that they can play, maybe putting flames on the arrows or something like that. But you only have like five cards to play in a quick round of succession. And it's about who plays their cards right and actually give you more skill-based control over the outcomes of the battles, which Civ kind of walks away from in favor of, like, are your forces just straight up better than the others?
So what kind of interesting interplays usually take place in these card-based games? Are we talking, like, elemental things, like in a Magic the Gathering type of setup? Or, like, what kind of outranks numbers and strategy?
That's a good question. I wonder if you did two layers of cards, or not necessarily two layers, but like I'm thinking about Magic the Gathering and how you can have a red-blue deck. So instead of just being stuck into individual leader decks of which you can unlock outside the game, you can kind of build a hybrid of like, this is the Gandhi Christianity deck. And so like you have the sort of Gandhi culture and diplomacy stuff, but then you can also layer in like turning water into wine or something. So you get like God powers fused with a leader, and you can do like combo decks like that. Or maybe you can even do like, I'm going to build a Catherine the Great and George Washington deck at the same time and seeing if it's just like, if there's no God level, but rather just leader level, because I know Civs also do the religious expansion. So you can always complicate it, but even just doing two leader hybrids and designing your own leader, I think would be pretty novel as an experience.
Yeah, it'd be neat from a historic perspective. Anyways, we're just about out of time there. Let's give this one a name.
It's like cards, decks. Is there something, I feel like there's something to like the cradle of civilization, but you know, being in somebody's hand, like the idea of a civilization being in a hand, I feel like that's a visual.
Song, he's got the whole world in his hands.
He's got the whole world in his hands. Hand of the world or world in hand is kind of fun.
World in Hand. Yeah, that gets a little close to Hand of Fate, the other kind of card-based video game, but I think it's different enough. We can work with that. That is World in Hand. That is our second pitch for the day. Let's go over to a listener email. We have one from Micah Squera, It says, how about a Robotron Smash TV arcade-style game to promote social distancing? The environments could be shopping malls, subway stations, etc. The player and characters would be unarmed, but must maintain at least 2 meters of distance from others as the environment fills up with more players and NPCs. All right, let's start the clock.
I love...
This is interesting. A game about maneuvering around crowded areas without getting too close to anyone. This is pretty cool. I'm thinking about, you know, if it is just kind of a matter of weaving in between kind of shifting safe spaces, almost like, you know, dodging lasers on your way to, you know, steal something in a heist movie. That would be like, that's kind of fun. That has kind of like a bullet hell feeling to it. But if there's even a matter of like, not everyone can be avoided, you just have to like go through the areas of least risk and see on the other end whether or not you were infected. Like that, I don't know, that's a fun probability game, but it also feels kind of unfair as well. Like if you just kind of happen to pass by an infected person in a low density zone, then like you made the right choice, but you still got punished for coming out with the wrong outcome. So I don't know, how do we balance these things?
When I think about Smash TV and I think about Robotron, I kind of get in this mental space of, would you still do a gun? And like, would that gun be now like almost like Lucio's sort of boop gun in Overwatch, where he can just sort of push people away from him? And sometimes that's off of a cliff, but I'm not necessarily suggesting that, but the idea of like these people are always around you, and it almost gives me like pacifist mode vibes from Geometry Wars. Do you remember that mode?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where it's just like, don't shoot anything, but rather don't get touched by anything either. It's a germaphobe's dream game, I guess. Yeah, but what do you think about something like that? You can, maybe your only offensive abilities are really to push people away and like reestablish the distance when someone is within a danger zone of you. It's like you have like a 3-2-1 countdown timer before there's failure or something. So you can actually get into tight situations, but if you can maneuver around them or boop people away, then you can kind of save yourself.
This also makes me think of Resident Evil.
Yeah.
You know, you're not always shooting the zombies. You have to kind of run past them. And the closer you get to them, the more chance they have of kind of reaching out and grabbing you. So there's kind of a specific strategy to kind of weaving through the groups of zombies without getting grabbed as well.
Gosh, you're just making me realize that Resident Evil has taught us how to social distance for a long time.
And it's been called Biohazard from the beginning in Japan.
It's true. You know, it's funny that you say that, because it's I was in a grocery store yesterday for the first time in months and months and months. And I found myself feeling like I was playing Resident Evil, of like I could feel my back sort of tighten and curl away from people as they would walk by me in aisles that were certainly not designed to keep people 6 feet apart from each other. So what else can you do in a game like Resident Evil? You can kind of, I know Leon has like some spin kicks and stuff that he can pull off, but maybe that's inappropriate.
I'd like to keep this nonviolent, because that's really not the answer to keeping away from people. Yeah, I mean, we could go in a fairly kind of stylish route. I'm thinking like a Bayonetta, where you're kind of constantly almost kind of dancing around people.
Cool.
Where you're doing lots of spins and twists and slides and stuff to get around people in a fantastical but entertaining way.
I also think if you had a mechanic where, because we're thinking about Smash TV, if you enter a room and you need to destroy all the enemies, then you can move to the next room. Maybe this is you're entering a space and you can successfully survive for some amount of time or not be touched for some amount of time, you can move to the next space. But the idea of like a Resident Evil where it's just proximity that sort of degrades, let's say you have a mask. Hey, let's wear a mask. Why not? Right. Mm-hmm. We should social distance and have masks. So you have a mask, but the more the mask is exposed to, you know, infected people, or just you're within proximity of people, the mask kind of wears down over time, and then you are without a mask. And then if you're without a mask, you're in that like scary Resident Evil, hey, one person touches me and I'm done, that limping that limping Redfield mode. But until, of course, you find a mask, or maybe you find mask filters or something like that, and those have a certain integrity and last you again. So you're kind of trying to balance keeping your equipment clean, sanitized. Maybe the save stations, instead of ink ribbons, can be hand washing stations. That's fun, too.
I would like if this was kind of a, you have to do very mundane tasks, but stay away from people, like a top-down view of like a grocery store. All of the items you need to pick up are highlighted on the map. You have to find your way to navigate through the store while trying to come in contact with as few people as possible.
I mean, gosh, I know this is all now feeling a little bit dystopian, but I think there's even an angle where, like, maybe you just have to be the scary thing about Resident Evil is being the cop who has a duty to I guess bring order or something to the city. And maybe you're an essential worker, right? Just imagine being a janitor at a college university or something like that, or like you said, a stocking person at a supermarket. The idea of your job is going to require you to do these tasks and be very much exposed to the public, but can you navigate it in such a way that that you stay safe? I mean, this is the real experience that people are facing.
Yeah, and you could even, you know, have to contend with like anti-mask protests and stuff like that, and could be a real problem areas, like maybe kind of the central area of a college, as you have to cross like a central courtyard, there might be like an anti-mask protest going on out there. So you either have to kind of brave it and go through the most dangerous part of campus, or take longer roundabout ways to get around, perhaps even in tighter corridors where you might be exposed to more responsible people wearing masks. But, you know, even that kind of takes chip damage away from your viral load in a way. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, ultimately you're kind of, you're trying to complete your objectives in the lowest amount of time, and that can be the kind of score chase element there. I do like kind of centralizing this around, you know, how much risk you're going to take to try to get that score down. Ultimately, knowing that if your, you know, viral load hits like a certain level, then it's game over. Like you've lost the challenge, and maybe even if you have traces of the virus after coming in contact with people, then you start infecting people at a certain percentage point, like at 30%, you start infecting people. And so the people that you have passed kind of incubate it. And so as you have to travel back to areas you've been before, kind of like in Resident Evil, where there are the Crimson Head zombies in the RE remake, areas that you've been before, those shoppers or students or whatever are now themselves infectious. And, you know, you have to, because, you know, you weren't careful the first time around. And so maybe you try to take it really careful and really choose the back roads and out of the way corridors for the first, you know, half of the game, because you don't want to sow those seeds that might come back to haunt you later on.
Maybe one additional thing that you could play with as a concept, and, you know, this is too real, so I don't want to like bring everybody down with this, but, you know, maybe you do all this in a level, but you don't really necessarily even get an indication or a strong indication that you have been infected, but rather you just know how many times you've been within risk, or you've put yourself in risk. And so it's at the end of a level where you're tested and you find out whether or not you've contracted this disease, you know, you get into, or this virus rather. So you almost start to have the structure of like a roguelike of like how much of your job can you do, or how far can you get, which is very much back in the, like the old arcade format of, you know, put in a coin to continue, right? Like Smash TV. And, you know, once you test positive, that's it. That's game over.
All right. That's enough time on that one. Let's give it a name.
Super happy, fun life.
Now, we've used the term viral load a few times, and I feel like that kind of fits the aesthetic of what we're going for.
Yeah. If you do some mechanic where you get any sort of offensive capability, you can always do viral lock and load.
Or your viral loadout.
Viral loadout. Oh my gosh. Hey, that's okay if you give the person tools and stuff to manage in real time, get some hand sanitizer spray and the whole
thing. That's true. Anyways, that's a fun one from the ever reliable Micah Squera. Thank you very much for sending that in. And if you would like to submit a video game idea, you can do so by going to playwrightcast@gmail.com, going to playwrightcast.com/pitch, or tweeting us at playwrightcast.
Special thank you to Protodome for the use of our theme song Hello World off the album Blue Noise. And while you're listening to things, you can go listen to Sound of Play this week and hear me and H hanging out a little bit more, talking about some great video game music. You can go listen to Sausage Factory and hear interviews with people who are actually making real games instead of us chumps who are just making up fake ones. And of course, Kane and Rince reviewing games, deep dives. This is not like the hype train that you might get in your typical podcast. This is a detailed deep dive into games that aren't always brand new, right? They're usually out and they're, it's almost post-hype reviews, yeah. Isn't it, Age?
Yep, we like to give time for the public opinion to settle a little bit so it's not as volatile as it is at launch. Wait for the backlash and then the backlash to the backlash to have kind of played out and see how history remembers it. Anyways, let's get into a redacted game to close out the episode here. I've got one for you today. Climb, swim, and redacted your way through a maze of cryptic redacted. So realistic, you can practically smell the decaying flesh. Mm. Unload an arsenal of lethal redacted on any wild redacted, giant redacted, or bloodthirsty redacted that gets in your way. Your mission is the deadliest one to date. The recovery of the fabled redacted, an incredible redacted, reputed to give its possessor vast power. Get ready to cross the redacted to take on impossible odds while exploring redacted, ancient redacted, redacted pyramids, and the lost city of redacted.
Oh, okay. First, I was very in zombie territory here, but maybe that's entirely incorrect. I seem to be on a long journey. It's sprawling. So that makes me think, that brings my mind to this as probably a larger game, or I guess maybe, I don't know how to say it, I guess a double to triple A game. I feel like indie games, mm-hmm. It's hard to capture this type of scope. And then there's pyramids. Okay. And
I have to say that aspects of this description, certain aspects feel a little bit misleading.
Okay.
But that's what kind of makes it fun too.
And did you mention something about puzzles or solving something?
Let me check. Let's see. Unload an arsenal of lethal redacted on any wild redacted, giant redacted, or bloodthirsty redacted that gets in your way. The recovery of fabled redacted, an incredible redacted, reputed to give its possessor vast power. Get ready to cross the redacted to take on impossible odds while exploring redacted, ancient redacted, redacted pyramids, and the lost city of redacted. Doesn't look like there's specific mention of puzzles.
Okay.
Although it does say climb, swim, and redacted your way through a maze of cryptid redacted, so realistic. So however you take those redacted words, might play into that.
The first thing I'm trying to do is Google. Well, I don't want to Google anything, but I'm trying to think of there's a PlayStation 4 game where it is kind of isometric co-op. You are playing as people fighting undead zombies. Is there help here with this game name? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Are you talking about Dead Age, maybe?
No, it's... Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh, what the heck? Oh my goodness, it's digital only. I can't even think of it. I think the word dead is in it.
No, Dead Age would be my... Well, no, that's Dead Light. No, that's not it.
It might be Dead Light. I'm almost looking at Dead Nation. Dead Nation is what I was
saying.
There
we go. Yep, that's correct. Sorry, that is not correct, but it's, it is the one you were thinking of.
I did it. No, I didn't do it. Okay. It's not Dead Nation. Okay. Can I get some metadata?
This game received a 91 Metascore and an 8.4 user score.
Whoa.
It was the number two best game of its platform of its year, number two most discussed game of its platform of its year, and number two most shared game on its platform of that year. It is a multi-platform game, but in a non-exhaustive way. It did launch on a specific platform, but it became better known when it launched on a second platform later on.
So very well regarded and on multiple platforms. The pyramid thing is tripping me up because I feel like that has to be, I feel like that's not a very popular setting for fighting the undead. Is this a FromSoft game?
It is not.
I guess I can count. I can technically count as my second guess, but yikes. Could I get like some reviews or something? I feel like I'm not honing in.
Let me try to find something. There is a 10 review that says, amazing. Every gamer should play this game. It has so much to offer. However, Redacted will feel outdated to new gamers who haven't experienced and enjoyed games on the older PlayStation.
Oh.
One review says, this game is stupid, boring, long, and infuriating. The movies are cool, though.
The movies are cool.
So that throws another wrinkle into the mix.
I'm just going to have, for my own sanity, have to disregard that any idea that this could be like an FMV or something. Okay, I want to zoom in one more question. Is this a God of War game?
It's not a God of War game.
That for me is like pyramids, battling things that are potentially undead, swimming, climbing. There must be something that I'm not...
I can tell you this game came out in 1996.
Oh, oh my God. Is this Tomb Raider?
It is indeed.
Oh my God. Oh my goodness. I think you probably generously gave me kind of like 2.5 guesses in there with my two.
That's all right. That's all right.
Are you killing undead in that game?
There's an aspect of that. Most of the time you're kind of fighting against wildlife, but it does get more supernatural as the game progresses. But yeah, I don't know if I fully agree with everything in this summary. It says, climb, swim, and backflip your way through a maze of cryptic death traps, so realistic you could practically smell the decaying flesh. Unload an arsenal of lethal firepower on any wild dog, giant lizard, or bloodthirsty mercenary that gets in your way. Your mission is the deadliest one to date, the recovery of the fabled Scion, an incredible treasure reputed to give its possessor vast power. Wow. Get ready to cross the globe to take on impossible odds while exploring Incan ruins, ancient Rome, Egyptian pyramids, and the lost city of Atlantis.
Holy cannoli. Holy cannoli. Tomb Raider.
Yeah, so there we are. We got another victory. We should really be keeping a tally of how many we get versus how many we miss.
That's right.
Highly rated game. Classic piece of video game history there.
Yeah, 1996 really helped, so I appreciate that.
Well, that'll do it for us today. We will catch you again next week.
Bye.